Hi, this is Angelique Kidjo, and you're listening to People Powered Radio, KPFK 90.7 FM Los Angeles, 98.7 FM Santa Barbara, and worldwide on the web at www.kpfk.org. Peace and love.
Welcome to Sojourner Truth. We live in a global world. We are all interrelated. So on Sojourner Truth, we work to bring directly to you news and views on local, national, and international policies and stories that affect us all. And we draw out how those of us most impacted, women, communities of color, and other communities, are responding. We also discuss the relationship between art and politics. You are listening to Sojourner Truth with your host, Nana Jumphy. Today on Sojourner Truth, we talk to Mildred Taylor and her husband, Rodney Taylor, who has been freed after 15 months in one of the deadliest detention prisons in the country. And then we speak with Professor Marcus Hunter, who helps us understand the fuller context and urgent next steps to fight MAGA efforts to return us all back to the era of Jim Crow. All this and more on Sojourner Truth Radio. You are listening to Sojourner Truth Radio with your host, Nana Jumphy. This past May Day, Rodney Taylor was released from Stewart Detention Center in Georgia, one of the deadliest immigration prisons in the United States, with a long history of horrible conditions and medical abuse that included the forced and non-consensual hysterectomies of women detained there. Rodney's wife, Mildred Taylor, fought furiously, ferociously for his release for 15 months, alongside several community organizations and hundreds of community members. Greetings to you both. So grateful you could be here with us.
How y'all doing?
Doing great. How are you?
Doing great. Doing great. Doing great. I am just so thrilled that Rodney is free. Mildred, you have been on the front line fighting to free Rodney alongside and with the support of community members, community organizations, congressional members, people that are local elected, state elected, so many people. What has this 15-month journey been?
It's been a real roller coaster, starting from January 15, 2025, to Rodney being detained, to him not getting access to his prosthetics, the new ones, to him falling, to him going to a solitary confinement, to us getting denied, and then going into appeals, to habeases, his ICE officer saying that there's travel documents, to fear, to going to DC, coming back, rallies, protests, signatures that have been delivered to Atlanta ICE Field office, more protests, more events, more advocacy. And then one day I get a phone call and then he's home. So here we are today.
It sounds a little simpler than it actually was, but absolutely, just really a journey. And I think there's, you know, some lessons here that can be learned about how we move as community. You know, our brother Malcolm X teaches us
that we've got to get free by any means necessary. And what that means is that we put it all on the dry erase board, right? And we need everyone's help. Like, this is really a situation in which we had help from the grassroots to congressional folks, to local electeds, to people who were just community members who were concerned, that weren't even, you know, paid as part of nonprofits, et cetera. Just a whole slew of people. And I want to get to that. But before I get to that, you know, I want you to talk about Rodney's story. Those who know me from the show know that I'm an attorney, and I know better than to have people talk themselves unless they try to twist their words against them. So, you know, want you, Mildred, to talk about Rodney. Give people a sense of who we're talking about.
Rodney was born in Liberia, West Africa in 1978. He was born with several different disabilities, including left cup foot and a right foot missing altogether, 3 missing digits in his right hand. Rodney was assessed by Shriners Children's Hospital in Liberia, and they saw it fit for him to come to the U.S. They thought he could thrive. Back then, during the time Rodney was born, and even now still, children that were born with disabilities are often, you know, murdered, kidnapped, used in rituals. They're often are considered taboo. And so for his own safety and chances for him to thrive, Shriners Children's Hospital saw that he could come to America and live. And during that time, Liberia didn't have like detailed or significant imaging machinery like MRIs. Rodney arrived here at the age of 2, and he was fitted with prosthetics, and he was able to walk for the first time by the age of 3 years old. By the time Rodney is 10 years old, he is a full double amputee. He's amputated below the knee on his left leg and above the knee on his right. Rodney becomes a barber, gets his certificate at the age of 14 in high school, finished the program, a year program in Indiana, comes to Georgia at the age of 16, 17. And it's when some of the problems start to happen, right? So at the age of 17, Rodney becomes railroaded. He's accused of burglary. He is told if he doesn't plead guilty, then he would have to serve 5 years in prison. And at that time in 1997, about 30 years ago, the prosthetics that Rodney wore were made out of wood. They were extremely heavy. They were about 35 pounds each leg. And so the idea of being accused of climbing out of an apartment window with heavy stereo equipment is not physically possible. However, this is what they accused a Black man, Rodney at the time, a Black young man rather, in high school, because he fit the description of a Black man. And so Rodney ends up serving about 9 months. He gets a pardon in 2010. And Georgia is very conservative. Georgia doesn't give pardons very easy. It's quite rare. And at the time of Rodney's pardon in 2010, it was a Republican governor, Sonny Perdue, that gives Rodney his pardon. And so that makes it that much more rare. And to be an undocumented person makes Rodney a unicorn altogether to get this pardon. And so fast forward to who Rodney is, giving back to the community, providing free haircuts, have his own nonprofit, access to healthcare with the health fair. And then, you know, our world comes to a screeching halt. Only 11 days after we engage, Rodney is detained not too far from our home with guns drawn, with men marked, unmarked cars. They're wearing bulletproof vests. Our kids are in the car crying. Rodney Taylor, get out the car. At the time when they came and picked up Rodney, there was no paperwork. There was no court order. There was no judge signature. There was no paper, nothing, no documents were handed to us. And so that's how he came to the country.
You are listening to Sojourner Truth with your host, Nana Jumphy. And we are speaking with Mildred Taylor and her husband, Rodney, freed after a 15-month campaign from Stewart Detention Center in Georgia. Before we talk further, I want to remind our KPFK family that we are in Fund Drive. if you want to keep this station going, if you want to keep Sojourner Truth going, keep us on the airwaves and on the internets. We need your support. Pleased to be joined now by Gary Baca, KPFK Program Director. Gary, what's the word?
818-985-5735 is the number to call to pledge your support for the Sojourner Truth Show every Friday from 5 to 6 p.m. Sojourner Truth, putting up the good fight for truth and justice. That's what KPFK stands for, truth and justice and fairness. Take time to pull over and pledge your support for human rights, for free speech, and recognizing the injustice that happens here in America, whether it be a police shooting, whether it be ICE, immigration. Sojourner Truth Radio brings you unapologetic public affairs from the front lines of global and local struggle. Hosted by human rights attorney Nana Jumphy, the show amplifies voices too often erased, connecting grassroots organizing to policy, history, and global movements. 818-985-5735, and go ahead and pledge that $100, that $500 to keep this program on the air and the many other programs that KPFK has to offer. Each episode of Sojourner Truth offers sharp headlines, deep analysis through the airwaves of racial justice, gender liberation, and international solidarity. You know, the true gift that we're offering is KPFK. The government is censoring us. The FCC is trying to censor public radio and free speech, going after Jimmy Kimmel, saying he's spreading hate. But what about Trump talking about Haitians or calling Mexican rapists or bad hombres? And he's always talking about someone. So why is it okay for him to spread hate and then accuse other people of doing the same? Well, free speech is free speech. Bottom line. 818-985-5735, 818-985-KPFK. If you're in solidarity with KPFK and free speech, pledge now so we can stay on the air and keep free speech alive by saying what we need to say about this administration. We want folks to stay calm, as they say, because in America, the reason we are so angry and there's so much tension in the air and anxiety is because of the economy. Because of these rising gas prices, because of food being not affordable, we really need to change this as a community, as a state. You know, the elections are coming up. We're voting for a new governor and voting this president out. The revolution will be broadcasted on KPFK. Gil Scott-Heron said it best. 818-985-5735, 818-985-KPFK. Call the phone room, say you want a T-shirt, pledge that $100, you'll get one, and a bumper sticker. 818-985-5735, 818-985-KPFK, or a pledge online at kpfk.org. We need to keep shows like this on the air. Democracy Now!, Tom Hartman, Kerry Harrison Files, Global Village, Background Briefing, The QR Code, all important shows to keep democracy alive and to save it. Let's be fair. The higher-ups are going after the blue-collar workers. 818-985-5735. The fight for social justice continues right here on Sojourner Truth and KPFK as we challenge the Trump administration. 818-985-5735 is the number to call to pledge your support for Sojourner Truth. 818-985-5735. And we're reaching out to Dodger fans out there. Los Angeles loves their Dodgers. And I like the gear, actually. I look good in blue. And I'm sure you do, too. Right now, the offer we have is the Shohei Ohtani bobblehead. And this is a bobblehead. We have about three different ones. This one is the National League Most Valuable Player bobblehead from Big Heads from FOCO. This is official, and you have Shohei Ohtani holding his MVP player award in a stand, and of course, his head is bobbling. 818-985-5735. Now, when they offered this at Dodger Stadium, the line was around the corner to get a Shohei Ohtani bobblehead. Well, we got the official, genuine merchandise from the National Baseball League, the MLB, Major League Baseball. Most Valuable Player, FOCO Big Heads, Bobblehead, Shohei Ohtani. 818-985-5735. 818-985-KPFK.
You are listening to Sojourn Truth with your host, Nana Jumpy. And we are speaking with Mildred Taylor and her husband, Rodney Taylor, freed after 15 months in one of the deadliest immigration prisons in the country, Stewart Detention Center in Georgia. Stewart Detention Prison is known to be one of the worst, literally, basically a torture chamber. At Baji, we say detention is torture, period. But some torture is worse than others. And Stewart has such a long history. And rarely do we get to hear from people who have been in these places to tell us just a little bit about what has happened there. So thinking of, like, if there are two things that you want people to know, because they may never end up in Stewart, two things you want them to know about what it is to be imprisoned at Stewart Detention.
It's exactly what you said, a prison. It's, the place is so, it's like it's meant to just take away your hope, take away your ability to believe that, you know, I can get out of here. And this is wrong what they're doing in there. Because the place is just so, it's like, they treat you like you're not even human. They treat you like you're not even human. In their mind, we can treat you however we want to treat you. And by the time you can say anything about it, you'll be out this country. So it's like, in their minds, like, we can treat you like you're not human. We can, all your needs are disregarded. Everything, like, your just basic human needs is disregarded. And they give you the bare minimum. They treat you like you are, like your cattle. I said this before, like, we like cattle waiting to get slaughtered. And they treat us just as if, like, it's, the place is run down. In fact, this is a facility that makes $1.9 billion a year profits. And the place is run down. They rarely fix anything. And that's why they put it in the middle of nowhere, because they just meant for you to deal with it. And they don't expect anybody to say anything. They don't expect, by the time they're ready to cover everything up, and by the time you get up out of there, you're gonna be so far in another country that nobody's gonna ask you. Nobody can come back and ask you, what was you doing? How was your treatment in Stewart? And it's just, it's terrible. It's terrible. And even, like I said, I've been out for a week. And so many guys that got deported, they reach out to me now. You know, they reach out to me now, just like, man. And they don't believe I got out of there.
Wow.
They ask me, yeah, man, you got released? And I'm like, shh. And they're like, man, I don't believe it. Because when a lot of us in there, they wasn't even giving nobody bond. They wasn't even giving nobody nothing.
Wow.
And it's a terrible place.
And on top of that, being a person who is Black and disabled, I know that there were so many trials and tribulations that you went through just on that, with this facility, this prison, this torture space, claiming that it had the quote unquote resources and capacity to be able to make sure that you were okay. And it was completely different than that. Yeah. Tell just a couple things about what it was like for you as a brother who is a double amputee being in that prison.
It was like, I've been disabled for a long time, and I never felt like I was disabled until I went in there. They made my disability like stand out so bad that you was like, it was, and they was like, they didn't care. They're like, you know, you're no different from everybody else. Why should we treat you any different? You're not going to be here long. So why should we treat you any different? And I'm telling them, like, no, you know, the difference between me and a lot of other people in there, I speak English and I've been in this country for a long time. And I know that you have rights, there's human rights that you have to abide by. And when I see it not going on, I'm going to say something. You know, times when the AC wasn't working, I had to speak up about that. And they put me in a hole behind that. Times when you know, they refused to feed me, I'm telling you that I'm disabled. I shouldn't have to walk the length of two football fields back and forth just to get a meal. You should be able to bring that to me. And they like, no, you know, different from everybody else. And they tell me, oh, if they bring the food to you, that's a luxury. And I'm like, no, it's not. It's my human right. Like, but they were like, no, that's a luxury. You shouldn't be, you know, different from everybody else. They told me, well, if you can walk down to see your wife in visitation when she comes once, two times a month, you can walk to this chow hall every day. I'm like, no, that's not right. And just the simple fact of me getting, you know, my prosthetics and me be able to go see my doctor for my prosthetics is also, it's like you have to fight for everything. You're already in a place where your mind is your mind is going every which way, but then you have to fight just for regular thing that they're supposed to be doing. This thing that as a human right, you're supposed to have this right, and they just refuse to do it. And if it wasn't for all the people that fought for me on the outside, and the only time they addressed all of these issues is when somebody on the outside brought attention to it. Hmm. That's the only time they would address the issues, and they still didn't even do it. Like, wow. I was telling them the shower seat. They said, well, we got a shower seat for people with disability. I don't have any legs, and the shower seat that they have is not even equipped. If I sit on that thing, I'm going to fall and hurt myself. And they're like, well, that's what you have. That's what we have for you. That's what you have to use. And it's not right. Just for me to get a wheelchair, that was a huge uphill battle. You know, I had a damn near refuse to get out of my bed and tell one of the guards I was friendly with, like, you know, man, I can't walk. And he was like, well, then I'll talk to somebody and see if I can get you to the medical. And when I got to medical, one of the nurses, he was like, man, I see you having a big issue. And if it wasn't for him, these two guys that I know, and I spoke to them on a regular basis, I had a rapport with them. And if it wasn't for them two guys, I still wouldn't have got a wheelchair. They still would have been like, well, we're not bringing your food to you no more. You just have to walk down there. If you don't walk down there, you don't eat. That's up to you.
Just outrageous. Just outrageous. And again, thank you so much for sharing with us, letting us know, because so many people don't hear what's happening, and particularly as it pertains to folk that are disabled and are being held in these detention prisons. Mildred, the work that it took. You always talk about how this is not just you, even though without you it don't happen, but that there's so many other people that have been involved. And just wanting to end here with some hope, because there are so many people who are listening right now who have family members that are detained, friends that are detained, that are trying to understand and, you know, how can they do something for their loved ones? What would you say to them right now?
I would say there is a light at the end of the tunnel. Don't give up. If you don't know where to turn, reach out to local organizations like Black Alliance Just Immigration, other organizations that are doing this work, that have the experience, that knows what they're doing to help support your family. There's no question too crazy to ask. There's many doors closed in my face because it was like, no, we don't relate to this immigration stuff you're talking about. Immigration is not a coffee shop conversation. It's not something people always talk about. So going knocking on doors, asking for help was very, very, very challenging. But don't give up on your loved one. Fight and fight and fight. Nobody gets left behind. When Rodney was chained and detained, I was too. So were the children. So was our family. So we all felt it, unfortunately. But don't give up here. Keep fighting. Call someone for help. Send some emails. Send a call. Pick up the phone. Contact your Congress, your elected officials. Get with these amazing organizations that know what they're doing. And ask them for support. Because they're usually willing to help. Almost always willing to help if they have capacity. So you're never alone. And don't feel like you're alone. Be encouraged. And deep down, reach down in your faith. Because our faith is what got us through. Amen. Big time. Oh, big time. I remember there was time when Rodney was like, I want to give up. Who are you going? you can't give up here. And so we picked you back off each other. He encouraged me. I encouraged him. But we didn't give up. So don't give up. You're not the only one. We're in this together. We're in this together.
We are in this together. Mildred, Rodney, thank you so very much. So happy again for you. And thank you so much. I know you're continuing to do the work. As you said, yes. No one left behind. And I know you're continuing to fight for others. So thank you. Thank you. Thank you. And that was Mildred and Rodney Taylor, who have fought for Rodney's release after 15 months in detention at Stewart Detention Prison, an immigration prison in Georgia. We are in Fund Drive, and every donation counts. Gary, I know we've got some great gifts for folks. I know I've got about 5 people who want to donate at least $100 each right now. What do they need to do?
818-985-5735 is a lucky number to call to pledge your support for Sojourner Truth Radio. Since its founding in the early 2000s, Sojourner Truth Radio has become a vital platform for connecting grassroots movements. Hosted by Nana Jumfy, the show was born out of an urgency to center voices often excluded from mainstream media. From Black women leaders to frontline immigrant organizers, over 2 decades it has covered pivotal moments, the aftermath of Hurricane Katrina, the global women's strike, Ferguson Uprising, all covered here on Sojourner Truth, Standing Rock, and countless international human rights struggles. Its legacy is one of unwavering, truth-telling, radical solidarity, and bridging local and global resistance. Originally created by Margaret Prescott and now with host Nana Jumfy. I'm not sure if you've noticed that we've been offering the Shohei Ohtani bobblehead. A lot of people are collecting these. This is a must-have for any Dodger fan, collector. So we want you to go to your phone and pledge your support for an $80 donation. We're offering the Shohei Ohtani Most Valuable Player bobblehead. Now, here's a clip. Here's a clip about the fans who were standing in line early in the morning for a Shohei Ohtani bobblehead. Let's listen in. For an $80 donation, 818-985-5735.
Why are you here?
I don't know why I'm here. I should be with the thousands of Dodger fans that have swarmed Dodger Stadium for their chance to get a Shohei Ohtani bobblehead.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Some who have been lined up for many hours already have one in their hands.
Only a limited number of those bobbleheads are being handed out, so many fans started lining up this morning. Mm-hmm. Kimberly Chang is live from Dodger Stadium with all the hype. Hey, Kim.
Oh, Cher, your voice sounds a little raspy. I don't think you're feeling well. You might be able to get down here in time, but you know what? I don't think so, because a lot of people have been here since early this morning. Take a look at Sky 5. You can see Dodgers fans just trickling into the stadium right now. According to the Dodgers team, promotional items are limited to about 40,000. So far, more than 40,000 fans are expected here at the stadium tonight, so it's possible that not everyone will get one of those coveted bobbleheads. First pitch is at 7:10, but there are a lot of people who arrived early, some at 7 a.m.
Hey,
Louis lined up before the gates opened. As I was walking, I live 2 blocks away from the bus stop, number 4. I was trying to hide my Dodger blanket on my, hopefully people are not judging me. Araceli Torres woke up at 5 a.m., took a bus, and walked to the stadium to be the first in line. Danielle wanted the bobblehead. She's not the only one. The free giveaway, a Shohei Ohtani bobblehead.
He's done a lot for L.A. in general, and it's just, I heard it's a real collectible piece to have.
It's really cute. You're a huge fan?
He's a really good, yeah, he has diehard, yes.
These fans traveled from Japan hoping to get that rare collectible.
You flew from Japan to come to this game for the bobblehead.
Yes, bobblehead.
You love Shohei?
Of course.
The last time the Dodgers gave away an Ohtani bobblehead in May, fans also lined up before the gates opened.
You'll be here for several hours. That means no lunch, no dinner.
It's worth it.
They all told me it's worth it.
And I'm not going to sell it on eBay. I'm going to keep it forever.
You hope someday, you know, it makes good money once he retires.
It's part of the memory and the games.
Yeah. So you're going to keep yours.
Yes.
All right, I'm here because of you, Frank Buckley. You had me come down here early this morning.
What did Frank say this morning?
He said, be the first 400 in line.
And we have already seen video of some people receiving those very rare bobbleheads. Now, you heard some of the fans there say that they're planning on keeping theirs. Well, I've already seen some listed online for a couple of $100s on the secondary market. I even saw one for $3,500. Reporting live, Kimberly Chang, KTLA 5 News.
I know, I'm so upset. Kimberly, can you go get one for yourself and leave it on your desk?
Yeah.
Oh, I'm trying. I am trying.
My God, you can hear the helicopters hovering.
I know. I mean, like... Incredible. Thanks, Kimberly.
More Sojourner Truth with Dr. Marcus Hunter after this station break.
Hi, I'm Danny Glover, and you're listening to Fiercely Independent KPFK 90.7 FM in Los Angeles, 98.7 FM in Santa Barbara, and worldwide at kpfk.org, radio powered by the people.
You are listening to Sojourner Truth with your host, Nana Jumphy. Pleased to be joined now in this segment by Dr. Marcus Hunter. Dr. Hunter is a transformation architect, a highly regarded author, an academic, a policy expert, and a professor and humanitarian currently teaching at UCLA. Greetings, Marcus. Thank you so much for joining us.
It is an absolute pleasure. Thank you.
You know, I don't even know where to begin. The attack level is gone. You know how we have like arcs of escalation when we're doing our organizing? They clearly have arc of escalation for their organizing too. And they've moved into a different part of the arc, as we see, in terms of these attacks against Black folks. Let's look first at Louisiana versus Calais. You know, you have people who understand in our communities and beyond, that something very terrible has happened and that certainly there's an attack on democracy that has occurred. But I don't think folks really understand how the attack on Black voting rights is an attack on democracy and how it impacts Black folks' everyday life.
Right.
Because it's so partisan and politics is so nasty and awful nowadays. Right. Talk to us about that, though, because it does mean something. It's not nothing.
Right. The Supreme Court did not simply weaken the Voting Rights Act. It weakened the protective spine of Black citizenship in modern democracy. When voting protections disappear, at the same moment, state surveillance and enforcement powers expand. We can insert here ICE, for example. Black communities understand exactly what kind of crossroads this country is approaching. And this is something that Black voters, Black people were saying leading into the presidential election, and in many cases were not listened to. Because what we're witnessing is not isolated policies or isolated Supreme Court decisions. Rather, they are coordinated architecture of rollback, from attacks on Black studies to attacks on Black women in leadership to the weakening of voting protections, the expansion of DHS power. The through line is clear. Shrinking Black democratic influence in American life is a primary target and objective.
You know, when I talk to people about this, and thank you so much for that, because you've said, stated it like and drawn the line so clearly. When you talk to people about this, I don't think people really understand why that matters to the whole project. The ways in which Black freedom has literally meant freedom for everyone else. And therefore, the restriction on Black freedom is inevitably going to mean the restriction on everyone else. Like, yes, if they can shoot Keith Porter, then obviously they can shoot Nicole Good. You know what I'm saying? Like, these things go together.
Absolutely. The history of the nation, which is something that has been politicized and is being banned in many different ways, teaches us that there was a population, a series of populations who were not included as voters when the country was establishing itself, enslaved African people and women. And so when we see attacks on women, or we see attacks on Black people, or we see limits or restrictions being placed on those groups, is an attempt to return back to a place where only white men with property were able to have a say in how the country moved and flowed. There are many people who see that as the version of making America great again, that if we get back to that, that's when America was great. And we know for a fact, America's greatness is something that is in the future. It is not currently something that it is rested on at any point in its history. It's something that is perhaps in the near future, but a future nonetheless. So these attacks are not accidental. They're precise, they're concise, and they're happening at multiple levels. So there's a reason Black history, Black studies, Black political power, and Black representation are all being targeted simultaneously. Because, as I say in my book, Radical Reparations, memory is power. Education is power. Voting is power. Representation is power. These battles are not separate culture wars, as many folks will try to say. They are struggles over who gets to shape the future of American democracy and who gets to be included.
Yeah, absolutely. And when you were talking, I was thinking about like Epstein class then, you know, now Jefferson class then, right? And right. All the classes in between, where you just have white men with property who have the, you know, trying to consolidate the money, consolidate the power while they engage in all kinds of atrocities while trying to present themselves as the innocent and as the moral and as the superior in the space. You talk about radical reparations and thinking about how much we have moved in terms of even the public psyche on reparations.
Yeah.
One of the things that I do as the ED of the Black Alliance for Just Immigration is participate in the United Nations Permanent Forum for People of African Descent. Reparations is a key issue there. Also work with organizations, the Black folks and Black orgs that have been pushing for reparations in the state of California, right? Okay. And so it's something that just, it went from a conversation that wasn't being had by many to a conversation certainly being had by many. And right. Now suddenly, instead of talking about reparations, we try to hold on to some of the basics
right.
as we see these people take billions of dollars,
right.
billions yeah. out of our communities to invest back into what we thought. I thought the new Jim Crow, we got it clear that mass criminalization and mass incarceration was not the way to go. I mean, really, this rollback that you're talking about in dollars and cents.
Absolutely. I mean, on the reparations front, and you'll know this very well when you're in these spaces, we often hear, or we might even say we always hear, there is no money for reparations. No money for guaranteed housing, no money for public health, no money for Black communities harmed by generations of extraction. Yet somehow billions can materialize overnight when that project aligns with state power enforcement or political vanity. Insert here President Trump's ballroom. All of a sudden, billions can be found. And so part of what we also see is that working families are being told to tighten their belts while Washington is writing billion-dollar checks for walls, wars, raids, and ballrooms. So it also gets to the sense that we need to understand that how the nation, how America makes a budget and what it decides to spend on is a reflection of both its fears and its loves. And so when we see money often in American history being spent on the Black community, it's usually around policing or surveilling it, not educating it, not amplifying it, not supporting it. It's usually about tamping it down, keeping it in place. Money will be spent on that. But money to repair, you know, the centuries of trauma of enslavement, that's the money we're told doesn't exist. And then every single day, it seems, we're seeing new bills come through, often through reconciliation, which is not meant to be used the way that we see it being used, to authorize ballrooms.
Thinking about the organizations, the leadership, and all the different spheres, whether we're talking about in the political sphere, whether we're talking about the educational sphere, whether we're talking about the sphere of civil rights and you know, social justice movement, we see these directed attacks. You know, particularly those attacks are taking the form of criminalizing, but it's almost like they, you know, brought back the criminalization language or your terrorist language specifically to attack, again, Black leaders, Black leadership, those who are pushing back against the rollback that we clearly see is happening. Talk with us a little bit about that, because it seems almost like a steamroller that's very difficult to stop.
Oh, absolutely. On one side, what you see is a concerted effort to attempt to either silence folks literally by gerrymandering districts so that you lose Congresswoman Jasmine Crockett out of Dallas, quite literally. And you also see the silencing, chilling effect happening in our news media, where it's been made very clear if you talk about certain things or you publish certain things, you're now under the ire. We've also seen it in television and other places where the FCC is now, you know, fining people so that shows get canceled if you're covering something that makes the administration upset. And so we see the way in which the airways have been politicized, not in favor of the American public, but instead out of fear of the current administration. The other point about it, I think that's super important, is especially for listeners in Los Angeles, is that everything that you're describing, these are not abstract politics. Federal priorities shape whether communities receive investment in schools, transit, clean air, disaster preparedness. Shout out to all of the survivors of the Altadena and the Pacific Palisades fires, the Malibu fires, and affordable housing, and whether public resources continue flowing towards punishment and spectacle. So ultimately, a big part of what we're seeing here is while there's this concerted attack on a population, what we also know from the voting when we disaggregate it is that all Black people, while the majority of Black people sort of voted for Kamala Harris, there was, for example, about 75% of Black men voted for Kamala Harris. So there's 25% that did not. These kinds of efforts, whether or not the folks who are putting them forward know it or not, may actually do the opposite of what they're looking for, which is to disorient and distort people's perception of one another, where in fact, what you may have is people being even more unified because these attacks have made it clear that, oh, y'all are talking about us. And who gets to count as Black are a lot of people. It's not just people whose skin color is Black. It's people whose citizenship status is unclear or undocumented. You get to be treated poorly. If you are Haitian, you have to have a big fight about keeping your temporary status. You know, there are certain things that are happening that I think are illustrating across the board that people who are in different categories are not included in what there are some who are making America great again see as not being American.
thinking about the lessons we learned to fight back, because one of the things that I am concerned about, and I'm sure others are, including yourself, is people trying to rebuild what they see as crumbling. Mm-hmm. There must have been some flaws in the system as it was set up, mm-hmm. if it was so easily been turned on itself, so easily dismantled in some places, like the East Wing of the White House, you know? Mm-hmm. And how do we, what are some of the lessons, or how should we be thinking about what needs to be done right now in ways that just don't have us rebuilding the same, you know, shaky foundation space that we had built on before?
Yeah, I'll start by invoking the glorious sociologist Audre Lorde, who is often quoted for saying, the master's tools will not dismantle the master's house. And oftentimes people take that quite literally. And when I'm teaching it with my students, I try to expand it out to say that she's talking about the master and the master's house and the master's tool in the context of American slavery, or we can even say the global slave empire. And why that matters as context is because the master's tools cannot dismantle the master's house, because the master didn't build anything. The master told the enslaved people, I want a house, make it happen. Okay, so what we have to remember always is that we quite literally built this country. We are builders. Black people are builders. When they were migrating out of the traditional South and going from Natchez, Mississippi to Chicago, Illinois, they had a dream in their mind of a church or a barbershop or a hair salon, and they didn't simply just dream it, they built it. So this is why during the Great Migration, on multiple blocks, there would be four churches or three hair salons or four barbershops. And so I think it's important for us as Black people to remember our ability, our superpower as builders, and to remember that part of what's happened in many ways is that not a lot of things were built in our favor in terms of other administrations that have come through preceding and then following the first Trump administration, so that it hasn't been all that difficult for him to tear down. And then when we see the tear down projects that are happening, they're all really in reference to the civil rights era. So that leaves questions. Okay, so since 1968, 1970, let's just be generous and say 19, let's just use 1975, 1976, since that'll give us a nice 50 year mark. There was nothing to tear down in that period, other than affirmative action. That tells us everything about what we have been accepting. And so I hope that all of us who are paying attention are watching that, for better or for worse, executive power can look like this. Okay, executive power can be a president pardoning people every single day, which means Mumia could be out of jail any day of the week that there is a Democratic president, as opposed to what we've been made to think, which is wait until my second term is almost done, ask me nicely, wait quietly, and maybe I might. On this, we're learning you can insurrect. And on the first day that I'm elected president, all of you are free. Records clean. So also, I want us to not just be looking at Trump for all of the illegality that he's doing, but also for this very muscular version of the executive branch that we have never been exposed to, other than when it is being used as a weapon to further suppress Black people. What does it mean to have a muscular executive office that is expressing the freedom and liberation of Black people, which we know is the freedom and liberation of everyone else? These are the kinds of notes we should be taking. So later, when people come and tell us, oh, I don't think we can do this. For example, when presidential nominee Kamala Harris was asked about reparations and H.R. 40, she said that is something that Congress should do. But we are watching a president do all sorts of things. So that means that the president can do things that we previously were told were only able to happen through the legislative branch. So we should be taking notes, and we should be making sure that we're holding whatever progressive administration comes accountable to being able to exercise the full muscular aspects of the executive branch, because we know in American government, it may be divided government. We don't know if you're going to have the House and the Senate. We just know that you have the presidency. What are you going to do executively in favor of all of these communities that have been put into pain and suffering, waiting and voting for a new reality?
thank you for that framing, and as well as the context, thinking about that in the additional context of asking for what we want instead of a compromise. The great Sherrilyn Ifill, who's now the director of the 14th Amendment Center at Howard Law School, when affirmative action fell, she said, you know, one thing that it makes me think of is that affirmative action was a compromise, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. It was a compromise. What we want is actually way more than that. And absolutely. It caused me to think there's so many times that what we are fighting for is like Haitian TPS, right? When mm-hmm. I think with Baji, mm-hmm. we're like, let us fight for permanent protections.
Right.
It's okay as a Band-Aid, but the Band-Aid can't be a Band-Aid for 20. We got to be willing to fight, move into our courage bag, move into our culture bag, move into our community bag,
yes.
to pull ourselves together to be able to fight for everything. Brand new socks and drawers. We want it all.
Absolutely. And to your point on the temporary, it's like, how is a nation known as Haiti, which helped America liberate itself from being the colony of the British Empire, still in temporary position? You know, this right. is the way we've been made to accept certain things. And part of it would be because, you know, the progressive presidents say, my hands are tied. I can't do this. I can't do that. And this is in my lifetime, the first time I've seen an executive branch. Now, a lot of it is illegal. So I want to be clear about naming that. And at the same time, seeing it do all sorts of things, you know, which have led to the shutdown of this, the closing of this, the settlements over here and all of these other things. It's like, oh, so the president does have power to shape things. And we have often been made like, okay, now I'm president. You all go out and you all go try to shape things. It's like, well, that's what our vote is about, is empowering you to be the shaper. And what we've been getting is less shape and more symbolic representation, symbolic support. And it feels good sometimes. And then when you look up, it's very easy to tear it down.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Fascinating. Thank you so very much for speaking with me, Dr. Hunter. I really, really appreciate that. This has been a great conversation. We definitely want to have you back. We got to talk more about how we push it. So I really appreciate you. Thank you so very much.
You already know. I look forward to it.
You are listening to Sojourner Truth with your host, Nana Jumphy. And that was Dr. Marcus Hunter on fighting the rollbacks on full citizenship in this country. Full citizenship for Black people. Citizenship that impacts us all. We are almost at the end of the hour, and you still have time to give, to show us some love. Gary, how do folks get in where they fit in supporting KPFK and Sojourner Truth?
Thank you, Nana Jumphy. 818-985-5735. Okay, we have a $300 challenge that just came in from Thelma and Albert in Lakewood. Together, they combined their money for a $300 donation to this station. So this is a challenge that we have right now, folks, that we're putting on the table for Sojourner Truth. So if you believe in truth, justice, and fairness, call 818-985-5735, 818-985-KPFK. So we're asking you to go to your phone and support this radio station. As mentioned, we do have the KPFK tote bag, the KPFK t-shirt, $65 donation, the bumper sticker. If you pledge that $100, you get that t-shirt, you get that bumper sticker. And we also have the bobblehead, the Shohei Ohtani bobblehead. This is official from Major League Baseball players, genuine merchandise from FOCO. And this is FOCO Big Heads. This is the most valuable player bobblehead from Shohei Ohtani. He's holding his most valuable player plaque, and it has the official Major League Baseball emblem on the front, which is nice and shiny, a shiny baseball. So once again, the National League Most Valuable Player bobblehead of Shohei Ohtani, and this is for an $80 donation. Now, these are very collectible. Folks already are calling. We have a limited amount. Ask the phone room if we have any, because the phone room is ringing off the hook right now. 818-985-5735. But the real value is KPFK, this radio station. It's a jewel. It's a diamond in the rough, literally. When we talk about democracy, we talk about fairness. You know, we're right in the middle. Some people say, you know, it's not about the right or the left. Sometimes it's just about justice, honesty. 818-985-5735. 818-985-KPFK. I recently went to Mexico, and the people there were so humble, so nice. And it breaks my heart to see what Border Patrol and ICE has done to hardworking people here in America. We were treated with class and respect. And that's what I gave the people in Mexico. And I think that's what we need to do here in America, is respect and love the people that are trying to make a living. And we're fighting the good fight, talking to politicians, talking to world leaders about the things that are bothering us, such as high gas prices. Now, a lot of you are traveling, having to go to see someone in the hospital, sick. You're going back and forth. I heard one gentleman say that he's spending at least $125 going one way, round trip, to see his dad. So that's $500 a week. That's $1,000 every 2 weeks. You do the math, right? Is it costing us $2,000 a month to get around? It's something that we need to take a good look at, and the reasons why. Who's making money off of this? Who's profiting from this? 818-985-5735. Call now with your pledge of $100. We can meet that match that we have of $300. We want to make it $600, so three of you can call and pledge your support. 818-985-5735, and let's meet the challenge. Let's make that match. That $300 will be $600 for KPFK. But get yourself this bobblehead. It's an $80 donation. That's right, $80. You can become a sustainer at $10 or $20 a month to obtain this bobblehead. 818-985-KPFK. And let's give it up for Nana Jumfrey, human rights attorney, professor, executive director of Black Alliance for Just Immigration. Nana brings sharp and legal insight and unwavering commitment to community power and global justice. Give it up for Nana Jumfrey. Give it up for KPFK and Sojourner Truth, that we can keep these programs on the air. The voices that you don't hear, the hosts do so much research, and it's all for us, so we can be informed. Support free speech. We stand in solidarity with Jimmy Kimmel. We're right there with you, Jimmy. 818-985-5735. Pledge at any amount. Get yourself a t-shirt, a tote bag, but pledge for listener-sponsored nonprofit community radio. If you haven't given to your nonprofit ever, or if you've never contributed to KPFK, now's the time, because we are in need, and we are in our fund drive, the spring fund drive, and it's very important that we keep KPFK on the air by keeping the lights on and keeping the transmitter going. It costs roughly about $300 a day just to keep this radio station on the air. So help us, please. Help us support the many shows that are on KPFK. Back to you, Nana, and Sojourner Truth.
And that's our show. I'd like to thank our guests. I'd like to thank the Sojourner Truth family, including my dear sister, Margaret Prescott, our board operator, Ozzy Flamenco, and our producer, Gary Scott. I want to thank you for joining us. Let's get together at the same time and the same place next week for Sojourner Truth Radio. Continue to donate while we're in this fund drive. Be well.
Yeah. Yeah, it was probably about 25 years ago, maybe 30. I was driving home late from Hollywood one night, and I started listening to Alan Watts, and it just blew my mind. And it changed my life, really. I've listened to, like, almost all of Alan Watts. I have his entire, all of his lectures on my hard drive, you know? So, yeah, it was it's a favorite of mine. It's definitely one of the best stations in L.A.
As a KPFK listener, you expect to hear smart conversations and important issues every time you turn on the radio. We bring you facts and analysis, not partisanship or hype, so you can form your own opinions on the news. You count on KPFK for informed, insightful reporting. Don't take coverage like this for granted. It's here for you, thanks to the generous financial support of our